Welcome to MGO Podcast 13.18. The first several minutes of this podcast are about a 1990s hip-hop song, fortunately. So there's basketball things going on. There's lots of football things going on that should not be going on. But there's lots of stuff happening. But I feel like I am duty bound to start this podcast by mentioning that Tim Brando made an explicit and rather lengthy reference to the Salt and Pepper song "Push It" during.
That's where you're going with this
game.
I was wondering where this was like, going. Okay.
Purdue got a transition bucket, and Tim Brando said, push it real good. Why this? Okay, that's inappropriate because that song is about sex.
Well, yes, but so are like half the songs ever written by man. Like,
no,
you can't just like limit it, like people's references about, to songs that are not about sex. Like, okay, we're not talking about that anymore. We're gonna everything has to be
of
like an
REM songs that aren't about sex that are about like the Cuyahoga River or something.
We literally have a tradition about a song that's about a stalker. Like, people
or
get that reference,
Superman.
Right?
But in any case, it's not. I mean, there are songs that are sort of about sex, like Motown songs, or have some references to the idea that someday one person may love another person. When a man loves a woman, sure, all of that stuff. But we're talking about Salt and Pepper's "Push It," possibly the most explicitly sexual song in existence. A song that has like people going "Ooh, baby, baby," and like definite like sex grunts. Like, there are sex grunts in the song.
Kids are not going to get that. Kids think that they're like, a song about like pushing a Zelda box or something.
I don't want to think about Tim Brando doing that. I don't want to think about Tim Brando even listening to "Push It." That is uncomfortable for me. The fact that Tim Brando knows anything about Salt and Pepper is deeply problematic, and I don't like it.
He doesn't know enough to know what the song's about, apparently.
He knows. Everybody knows what the song's about.
He doesn't. He just thinks that, like, pushing it is like...
It is the least subtextual song in the history of songs.
Maybe he
it
thinks
is
all it's, he doesn't... He thinks that it's about basketball. He thinks that Salt and Pepper are talking about pace.
Nobody thinks that's about basketball.
Can we talk about how
children listening?
Can we talk about how Brando got called out by Juwan Howard's wife last night for saying that Jet and Jace play just like each other, and she goes, "They play nothing alike."
I didn't see that. I was too busy contemplating Tim Brando's perplexing musical references, which I remain baffled by a day later. I'm going to be thinking about this all week. It will never leave my mind. Tim Brando saying, push it real good.
So that song's, now we got one song. We're to the other.
Anyway, this is the MGO Bug Podcast. I'm Brian Cook.
I'm Seth Fisher.
We should probably push our sponsors real good. The MGO Podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out ugppensionapparel.com and find our stuff at mgoblogstore.com. We also want to thank our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Signal Wire, From the Cheap Seats, which is the Scholar Brothers Podcast, Team Fan Club, and Prentice 4M, where we usually are. All right. On to... I'm not going to say more serious matters because I take that very seriously, but more basketball-ish content. The Michigan goes into Mackey. It looks like they're going to get run out of the building a couple of times, and then they have a couple of big fight backs, and in the end, Purdue is just a little bit too much for them. And, I mean, on the one hand, that's the kind of performance that you could build something from. On the other hand, you know, Devontae Jones is driving for a bucket and he commits a charge on a guy who has 2 feet in the restricted circle.
Right.
Not one, but 2 feet in the restricted circle. And that was, I think, to go up. And Michigan almost got the game they needed to get what would have been an absolutely huge win for their tourney resume. And they just couldn't quite get there. And, you know, they get 28% three-point shooting by Purdue. They keep their turnovers down. They shoot 62% from two themselves, but they just can't slow down the Purdue offense enough, and particularly Jaden Ivey, who's 0-for-6 from three, but still puts up 23 points because he goes 8-of-12 from two and gets 7-of-8 free throws. So, you know, Matt D has talked a lot about Michigan's athleticism deficit in the backcourt, and Jaden Ivey is always going to be the guy to exploit that, especially because Ivey takes some bad shots. Right. So he hasn't quite gotten that, like, Cam Thompson, the LSU kid from next year. Now, he's not that guy, but he's got a little bit of that in him where he wants to take like the tough fadeaway, which really isn't part of his game. So I think 2 of 3 of his misses in this game were those where it's just like, he should not be taking that shot. And then he made literally almost every other 2-pointer he got.
And they were at the rim too. I mean, he was getting
right. Yeah.
Like then there weren't like, bad 2-pointers.
He blew by both Jones and Brooks and threw it down. And it's just like, that is what Michigan is lacking. Cause last year they had 3 different guys that you could stick on Jaden Ivey and probably be fine. Right. Mm-hmm. You could put Livers on him. You could put Shondi Brown on him and you could put Franz on him and you're going to be okay. And this year, Michigan simply does not have a wing on the roster. They do not have a 6'5 guy. They do not have a 6'6 guy. They do not have a guy who's got plus athleticism who's going to check the Jaden Ivies of the world. And that is kind of the beginning and the end, right? That's what Michigan needed.
They stuck Jace Howard out there for a moment, who's the most wing-like thing they have. And that almost felt like he needed to play more minutes, not because Jace Howard is really going to fix. I mean, he's got some offensive liabilities, and he's not, you know, a superb athlete, but he's a wing.
Right. He's the only wing on the roster, and he gets 5 minutes in this game, and you're like, I can see that a little bit.
Right.
But I just don't know if Michigan can play significantly better. Purdue can play worse. So one thing that really leaps out from the box score is Trevion Williams putting up 19. On 10 shooting possessions.
Mm-hmm.
And he hits a 3, he's 6-of-7 for 2, and none of those are like good shots, right? Those are all like,
yeah, that's Trevion Williams, know. Though I mean he makes bad shots, like, sure, he's done that to us forever. That's
his deal, but of course last year in this game he was 6-of-17, not 6-of-7. So to win this game they needed get a little bit better whistle on those Devontae Jones takes to the bucket, and needed Trevion Williams to go 3-of-7 from 2, and then that's the path to win this game, where they shoot very poorly from 3, and you get an off game from Zach Edey, and you're in it, and you can win that game. But Michigan just kind of can't quite get there. That's even with Hunter Dickinson hitting 2 or 3 threes, and they had 2 more 2s where he had a foot on the line.
Yeah.
So Dickinson goes 8-of-11 on other twos. He only gets 3 shots at the rim. And so I wonder about sustainability of that. Like on the one hand, that's a really good sign for him. You know, we were talking about like how projectable is his 3-point shooting going to be. And it looks extremely projectable. It just he's shooting 53% on other twos, and that's, you'll get some like post hooks that aren't quite close enough to the basket in that. So it's not quite all his jumpers, but he takes a face up jumper, and I just expect it to go down. So that's extremely positive development and hopefully something we can see sustained. This was a big step towards saying, yep, that's just who he is.
Yeah, I like that that's coming around because Michigan's playing two bigs. So, you know, you didn't get a whole lot out of Diabate in this game. But, you know, if he's going to be your rim dude, because he's, you know, he'd be great just like as a putback guy. But that's going to draw Hunter away from the basket more. I mean, in this game, it was you had to draw everyone away from the basket because Edie's there and just, you can't go around a 7'4" dude. But
yeah, and I think that's a major reason that Michigan got killed on the offensive boards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they get a total of 3 offensive rebounds. And where's Hunter Dickinson in this game? He's on the perimeter for the most part. So if he's shooting it, he's not going to get an offensive rebound on a jumper. Also, all those went down. But
and then elbow Diabate, range or something, yeah.
Diabate only plays 17 minutes. And that was definitely like, this guy is not playing well. You know, we were hoping that when Diabate showed up, that he would be a guy who could like switch 1 to 5 and it would be okay. That is not yet the case.
Right.
So he has the athletic profile where I think he can do it. But when he gets matched up against guards, that's still a mismatch. Like that, the dream of having like a fully switchable 5 where it's like, it does not matter who he gets up against. That's not happening. Cause I think Ivy gave him the business in this game.
Mm-hmm.
He's got all the potential in the world, but he's still so raw. And I just, I really hope Michigan is able to get a payoff year from him next year, right? Because he's creeping up in the draft stuff. Obviously, very projectable. But right now, he kind of feels like Nassir Little. If you remember Nassir Little, who was a 5-star who went to UNC.
Right.
Like, okay. He was pretty mediocre as a college player, but still was a lottery pick, and he's in the NBA. But UNC got 1 year out of him, and he was a bench player for them, and he was like mediocre. They never got the blow up year. Like, it would have been if like Franz left after his freshman year, right? That would have been exceedingly tragic.
Yeah. And I mean, people talk about Franz like if he'd be on the team this year, but obviously he's doing great in the NBA now. But he probably would have had a terrible time in the NBA if he went last year, too. So I think that Musa actually has some of the athletic potential. It's just having the potential and getting there are two different things. If you're half a step behind, you're still going to get blown by on a guy like Ivy. And his athleticism is not to the point yet where, you know, he can make up for being late on a guy like Ivy. And that's kind of where you have to be. But the more he gets comfortable, the more he's used to things, the more he's playing one position. Like, Michigan still has him trying to learn two positions at the same time. So the more he's just like a... If he comes back next year and he's a 5, I think he will be mostly switchable. I think that he'll be focused on playing one position. I think that he'll know his role in the defense better. I think he'll be grown a little bit. Probably not developing an outside shot, but I think that is probably more likely than him just not having the ability, because I see it sometimes.
No, I mean, he's clearly got massive upside, but has some things he needs to work on, hopefully in an off season where NIL convinces him that it's a good idea to come back.
Can he do NIL? He's foreign.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's so stupid. Oh, I forgot about that. Like, Ojabo couldn't do anything because he's, like, not an American.
Right. So the laws don't apply to him, and he's still, like, you know, he'd have to get a green card or something for it.
Oh, is that the reason?
Yeah, it's like it's a federal. It's the actual rule. You can't, if you're coming here on a student visa, you have to be a student. You can't go and get a job.
Oh, wow. Maybe he has a green card already because he's been in the States for a long time.
Or maybe they have enough time to get it for him, but I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway,
could also pay him the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, on the table.
Yeah. Anyway,
I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot else to talk about. I mean, Dickinson did disappointingly have a couple of turnovers in crunch time late, one of which was like a pass that hit him in the chest that would have been a dunk. So it's just, you're just on the verge of pulling the upset here. And you just, yeah, I think you might come back at the end of the year and look at this game and be like, if we could have got that game. If we just could have got it.
I mean, you needed... It would be a great moral victory, this game would, because, I don't know, Edie missed a lot of shots at the net, too, so I thought that Purdue deserved to win. Can I complain a little bit? I don't want to make this a ref show, because I didn't think the refs were that bad, but I think the rule where the last 2 minutes you can, it's the only time you can review an out of bounds.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah. Because in the other 38 minutes of that game, that ball's off. It's the Charles Matthews rule, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which actually happened against Purdue, right?
Yep. Yep. It's the third time it's happened against Purdue.
Rakes it out of Hunter Dickinson's hands. And the other 38 minutes of the game, it's just like, yeah, that's off. Trevor Williams knocked it out of bounds. But in the last 2 minutes, they go look at it. And because Hunter Dickinson's finger is still on the ball after Trevor Williams has completed the act of the swipe, it's a Purdue ball. And I was just like, not as livid about it as I was because I was just like used to it by now. But it is still stupid that there's 2 minutes in a game where rule is different. I think they just need to explicitly say that unless the ball touches some other part of the offensive player, it's their ball. And then you don't get these reviews.
Or just don't have that review. Just don't have that. I mean,
well, no, but like if you want to do the review, it's fine, but just have the rules be consistent. So if the ball goes out of bounds because a defender swatted at it, it doesn't has to touch some other part of the offensive player, his knee or his elbow or whatever, before it counts off the offensive player. Because that's what the rule is for the other 38 minutes of a basketball game.
Right. I would also, I don't know, I'm guessing Painter's not doing this, even though it's the third time this has happened against Purdue, I believe. But I think that you should probably start coaching guys to swipe at a little bit more late in the games, unless before they change their rule, because, you know, but knock the ball out of bounds, it's your ball nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to give up free throws in that situation, but, you know, it's pretty corner case. I did see an interesting thing from a hoop vision where Painter, if you make a bucket with 38 seconds left in the first half against Purdue, they're just going to wander away from the ball because the clock doesn't stop.
It's just like a glitch in the system.
Yeah. So you don't get your 2-for-1,
right?
Which is clever, but another thing that they should probably patch.
Uh-huh.
Like if you make a bucket with under a minute left in the first half, the clock should stop. But yeah, it's funny. There's like video examples of it where Painter is just like, don't touch the ball. And everybody just kind of walks away from it. Is antithetical to the rules, but Purdue is.
He's a good coach.
It's the spirit of Joe Tiller, except everybody loves Painter. Anyway,
yep.
We're going to take a break, come back, and talk about the less encouraging game this week.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up, you can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirt.com.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit prentice4m.com.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Michigan slips by Nebraska 85-79, and pretty much the long and short of it is Hunter Dickinson, 23 minutes.
Yep.
And I don't know why he was on the bench, because the game on BTN previous went to overtime, and Fox won't let me sign in with YouTube TV to watch on their app. So,
yeah, I watched the first couple minutes. I think they were titchy calls, which was a lot of that game. But it was just I couldn't see it well because I was watching on my phone. I signed in on like my father-in-law's cable account, and so I was just watching on a small phone screen. But according to my small phone screen, they were titchy little calls with his hands were up in the air and like somebody ran into him. But I don't know. Like, he's good enough at staying on the court. I kind of would rather play him than the utter collapse that happens when Michigan has to go without him for that long.
Well, and you look at this box score and it's like 23 minutes for Hunter Dickinson, 26 points. He finishes the game with 2 personal fouls. So I love John Beilein. I love Juwan Howard. But this kills me. It just kills me. You fouled him out. You fouled Hunter Dickinson out. And like, this is a Nebraska team that does not post. They don't do anything with their posts. They can't dump it into the post and be like, all right, we're going to go to work on you and try to get you a third foul. Especially right. Because their guy was in foul trouble the whole game. Derek Walker fouls out in 22 minutes. So it's like Eduardo Andre going to put number 3 on Dickinson. Like, come on. Play a zone if you have to play a zone, but Dickinson's plus 18 in this game. This game is a laugher if Dickinson plays 33 minutes instead of 23. And
sure, but I mean, Michigan just played in some like whistly games, and this one was also very, very whistly. I mean, there were 22 fouls called on Nebraska in this game, 17 on Michigan. That's more than there were in the Michigan State game against us. Like, this was a whistly game.
Yeah, but I mean, that'll happen sometimes, but this team cannot afford to have Hunter Dickinson off the floor for more than a couple minutes at a time to get him a breather in the middle of a half. And that's the whole story of this game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he puts up 26 points in 23 minutes, right? He goes 10 of 14 from two. He gets the line six times, hits all of those, right? It's the reason that this slipped out of hand was because Dickinson is not. I mean, he comes back on the court and Michigan goes on a 20-4 run to start the second half. And then he hits the bench for a little bit and Nebraska responds with a 19-3 run. So pretty clear that this team is utterly dependent on Dickinson to do anything. And that if he does get in foul trouble, the thing that you got to do is just pretend that he's not and hope that the defensive downside isn't as severe as putting him on the bench, which it definitely is.
I mean, did that make you a little nervous for next year when we're not going to have Hunter Dickinson? Because, I mean, that's what this team is next year, is this team minus Devontae Jones and Hunter, right?
Well, I mean, guys get better.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Eli Brooks, his first 2 years, everybody was like, this guy's got to go. He's like the winningest basketball player in Michigan history now. Like, you know, there are guys who are going to get a lot better next year. Like Diabate is going to get a lot better. Kobe Bufkin's going to get a lot better. Frankie Collins is going to get a lot better. Caleb Houston. Like, this is a very young team. And if you look at guys around the league, like Jonathan Davis, Wisconsin, you know, A.J. Hogard, even, like, a lot of guys come back their second years.
Ivy. I mean, look at Ivy last year. Yeah. I mean, Eli Brooks, though, I mean, he was another guy that we're going to lose again this year, but he was the one who kind of dragged Michigan along. And, you know, this could have gotten really ugly if he wasn't, you know, making some of his floaters and just settling things down on defense. Like, Nebraska was hitting shots that they normally don't. You know, Bryce McGowan's was just kind of getting in there and making his twos. But it was a... It looked like it was going to get away from them, and then Eli Brooks kind of settled things down and got them to halftime not down 10, which I thought was crucial.
Yeah. And, I mean, the other thing about this game is that Michigan continues being just absurdly Jekyll and Hyde from the three-point line. Mm-hmm. So they hit 2 of 15 in this game. Like, it's either they're going to hit 20% or they're going to hit better than 40%, and there's, like, which way is this going to go? And it really felt in the Purdue game it was going to be the bad one when they airballed two great looks
right
in their first two opportunities, and it wasn't. And then this one was just like, please, for the love of God, hit a shot. And Caleb Houston has a lot to do with that, because he's just, if he's checked, it's not a good shot. And if he's on the move, it's not a good shot. He's utterly dependent on other people to generate for him, which would be fine if Michigan had more than Hunter Dickinson.
Yeah.
Right. If they had a second banana for Hunter Dickinson, Caleb Houston could stand in the corner and be freshman Zach Irvin, and it would be fine. But they don't, so they have to rely on him for more stuff. And when they rely on him for more stuff, it just goes wrong. They're like, in both of these games, they gave him like pull up jumpers off the dribble, and I don't think either of them drew iron.
Yeah.
Like, it is dark.
Well, I mean, it goes back to how Dickinson dependent this whole team is, because teams that have to double him, that creates spacing for Caleb Houston, and he can shoot. This game, Devontae Jones was just off, too. That was part of their three-point problems as well. But, I mean, normally, Devontae Jones, you get him time, he can shoot, too. But he's another guy who's not he's not going to be able to get his three off on his own, right? He needs to be set. He needs to have that space. So teams that have to double Hunter, that's going to create a lot of room for the shooters outside, and they actually have time to set up their shots. If you don't double Hunter, if they can single him up, then there's always going to be somebody with a hand in the face. And, you know, even Eli Brooks is not a guy who's going to just get his own shot off, right? They need too much space to
do that on their own. Yeah, but and that's part of the thing about Dickinson being on the bench so much,
mm-hmm.
is that when he's on the bench, your three-point looks suck. And yeah. This is not a Nebraska team that can get away with not doubling Hunter Dickinson. So some of that is just like, okay, they had some good shots when Dickinson was in and they just missed them. But some of it is you're just tanking your whole offense, because not only are you're so dependent on Hunter Dickinson to create looks, not just for himself, but the rest of the team.
Right.
So the whole thing goes to hell in a handbasket real quick if he's not on the floor.
Yep. And I mean, there's not a whole lot of ways they can go around that, you know. Diabate has some upside down low, but he's, you know, at least a year away from being a major post presence. and, you know, same position anyway. So there's not, I mean, they don't have anyone who can take him off the dribble. They don't have any other, you know, you'd have to get like Kobe Bufkin to suddenly turn into a monster shooter or something. Like the things that can happen, or Frankie Collins, you know, coming around offensively. But like all those things are at least a year away.
Yeah. I mean, this is, where we're at now is just scuffling to make the tournament, and this was a big missed opportunity. Well, this wasn't a big missed opportunity, but the week was, I guess. Yeah. One final thing before we move on to football. Shout out to Rutgers for boat racing Michigan State by shooting 70% from inside the line. Someone get Steve Peichel on the line. We got a rematch coming up.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGO Blog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGO Blog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGOblog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent, trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
TeamFanClub.com asks you to become a team sponsor for your university by financially supporting a men's or women's team at the University of Michigan. Under Name, Image, and Likeness, college athletes can now earn money. Name, Image, and Likeness have athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for your favorite team and coach with a sponsorship. As a sponsor, you can pay a one-time payment or monthly payment starting at $20. A monthly payment by you of $20 or more will help your school's athletes tremendously. All players share equally, not just the starters. Team Fan Club provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train every day. TeamFanClub.com provides stability for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. This product makes so much sense. So, go to TeamFanClub.com and sponsor your team today.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Hey, so I have, like, insurance and stuff, but I don't really, like, know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGO Blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
My.
Seth? Randy? Ah, Jason, who is on the DL? I need takes hotter than a Hunter Dickinson mid-range jumper.
Ooh, spicy. I like
Seth,
it.
Give me your hottest take.
Michigan defensive coordinator Aiden Hutchinson.
Oh.
What?
All right, so you can pay him now because of NIL, right? Mm-hmm. So you can pay him a salary commensurate with what a defensive coordinator makes, which is going to be just as good, or if not better, than what he's going to make in the NFL next year.
He's going to be the number one pick in the draft. They make okay. more than $1 million a year.
He knows the defense backwards and forward. Okay, he can still to the NFL afterwards, right? And he can still play. This is in the rules. The defense of the captains used to be the signal caller, the play callers. So the rules of college football absolutely allow you to play your coordinator if he still has eligibility. So you could pay the man, and it gets him out of playing for either the Lions or the Jaguars, which, come on. Everyone wins in this scenario.
All right, that was the stupidest thing you had ever said until you brought up the Lions, and now I'm kind of on board.
To avoid the Lions, that's not a bad idea.
That's not totally implausible.
Okay, go ahead.
Brady, give me your hottest take.
Josh Gattis's timing to go to the Miami Hurricanes was all in an effort to make Jim Harbaugh's timing seem less terrible. What I'm saying is...
Wait, why?
Maybe they knew about this a long time ago, and to actually have Gattis go to the Hurricanes now makes the whole Harbaugh back and forth and the fact that it took all the way into February not seem like such a bad thing.
I mean, it makes sense that he very well could have been gone, you know, 3 weeks ago, and then he's like, well, wait, they might make me the head coach. So hang tight,
yeah,
Mario, and
that's true.
I'll let you know in a few weeks. And I mean, that could have happened.
All right.
Yeah. By the way, I'm heading to a Miami Hurricanes blog right now. I just want to announce that on the show.
Oh, no.
To do this segment.
What?
Yeah, to do this segment. So is this the appropriate time to announce that?
No, absolutely not.
I'm kidding.
In the middle of a show.
No, okay. Just trying to think of all the bad timing that's been happening to Michigan football recently.
All right, my hot take is quarterbacks coach Tom Brady.
Why is that a hot take?
He's never coached before, and he's like 42 years old. And
yes, he has. He's been coaching 44. The last three teams he played for.
And he's not like weird enough to do it. Like Jim Harbaugh doesn't need the money, but he's weird, so he wants to coach football. Like Tom Brady's weird in like a Goop kind of way, not like a Harbaugh kind of way. Like he's a Gwyneth Paltrow weird person.
Yeah, Goop Gwyneth Paltrow. He has his own cookbook weird.
Right. Yeah, like he's never eaten a strawberry. Like if he's going to do anything now, he's going to like build an ashram and like become a guru for people and tell them that they don't have cancer.
I still think he would go back and play next year for the 49ers 1 year.
Okay.
Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, if we could get him, that would be okay.
Oh, I'd take him in a second, right? I'd take him in a second. Yeah, go lead these men.
Hey,
sir.
You have $250 million and a supermodel wife. Do you want to go recruit?
Yeah. Also, every quarterback. Hey, Dante Moore. Hey, CJ Carr. Hey, whoever the kid is in 2025 who we want. How would you like to learn under the greatest quarterback ever to play the game?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think the recruiting is going to be as hard for him as most people.
That's true. He would just be like, who wants to come?
He'll knock on the door with seven rings and like, who wants to come?
Right.
So his job is just to recruit the quarterbacks, and that will be extremely easy. All right, well, this is less of a hot take than it seemed in the past, because the dude doesn't really want the job. All right, if you can't get enough Sklar Brothers, hit up their podcast view from the cheap seats. Leave your hot takes in the comments of their podcast. They will enjoy them greatly and possibly refer to them at some point.
Yes. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Randy.
All right, so events in football happened or not happened, such as they are. Jim Harbaugh goes to Minnesota, has a day-long interview, and then decides that he's going to stay. Shocking pretty much everybody, but that's a very Jim Harbaugh thing to do. Like, most people were like, I can't go back there after I, you know, left them at the altar. Well, that's not quite true.
Yeah, like let's stop that right there. I don't want to have any more metaphors about like girlfriends and wives and stuff like that. Like, you're not married to a football coach. You are contracting this man to like this is it. It's your, you know, it's the boss of your company who's an all-star who's taken you in good places and fixed things that were really messed up. Going and looking at another opportunity, and you're like, oh man, can we do as well without him? And then he comes back. You know, there was a lot of discourse, and I think still going on over like whether it was a sure thing that he went to the Vikings, and like the Vikings have their story they're putting out where like, oh, he walked in like he owned the place, like he already got the thing. But you know, the story still remains that Harbaugh wanted to go to the NFL. And Michigan kind of has to address that, and Harbaugh has to address that in a big way now.
Yeah, I mean, he reportedly told Ward Manuel that this was a, quote, one-time thing, and it wouldn't be an annual occurrence.
That's legally binding, that's right?
I mean, with Harbaugh, it's just like, he'll be struck by his whim, and he'll either decide to do it or not. But at some point, you're undermining your chances of being successful at Michigan. I mean, Michigan's recruiting bounce from beating Ohio State, winning the Big Ten, and going to the playoff has been not that great, right? I mean, they just picked up a 3-star running back who seems fine, but it's not like they're really capitalizing on a change in narrative around the program, because as soon as they lose to Georgia, it's like, will he or won't he? So the past month of talk about Michigan has been like, who's going to be the coach? And that's a full month where your guys are on the road, but I mean, you're kind of spinning your wheels, and then you lose both coordinators, one of them apparently contentiously.
Yeah.
And it's an unfortunate situation, because you can build a program off winning the Big Ten that is now punching at the same weight Ohio State is. But instead, we have Harbaugh stuff. Everybody's talking about how they're not good enough doing well enough in NIL. And it just kind of feels like there was a real opportunity here, and I guess I shouldn't say it's been squandered, but sure looks like Michigan didn't take advantage of being a hot name.
I mean, they finished strong in December, before the playoffs happened, but like they'd beaten Ohio State, they're Big Ten champs, and they signed, you know, Derek Moore. That was a big recruiting win. Clemens. They brought him in, and I think that wouldn't have happened if they didn't beat Ohio State and have that season at the end. So they capitalized there. But surely, like, they got, you know, this was going on signing day. And, like, second signing day is, like, nothing. Michigan had most of their class signed. But, like, you're usually trying to find somebody else. You're trying to get an edge rusher. I think that's probably, like, killed any last chance with Kevontae Henry, who ended up at Oklahoma. It, you know, killed an opportunity to, like, replace Kevontae Henry. It probably hurt them with going after Josh Connerly, and it probably hurt them in an opportunity to start off the 2023 class with a bang, right? Like, you could have had everybody out together, maybe gotten Dante Moore to make a decision or something like that, and started your 2023 class going. There's no breaks in recruiting, right? There's always the next thing coming. There's still plenty of opportunity to kind of recapture that, because there's... the decisions that mattered don't get made until next December, right? So, like, you were literally at the very beginning of the cycle. So, like, you have plenty of time to fix that. I don't like that it's still kind of going on. Like, you know, the Gaddis thing leaving, McDonald, whatever. I mean, he didn't like recruiting, and people knew that. And I think McDonald was going to take the first plane back to the NFL. So, I mean, the way they lost Gaddis and having people sniping at each other, I don't like at all. And even that, you know, we'll get into the Gaddis thing in a second, in offensive coordinator, but we were going to lose him anyway, right? He was going to be a head coach somewhere. We thought he was going to get a head coaching job this year. And, you know, when that didn't happen, we all figured next year someone's going to take him. He's the Broyles winner, right? So, you know, you lose him for 1 year that you would have had him.
Yeah, I guess. Also, I feel like him being the Broyles winner is so strange.
why do you have to question this?
Well, he's gone now, so I can just say my piece. Like, the offense is pretty decent, but there's a better Broyles candidate on the same staff Maybe two. Mike McDonald took a defense that was way worse than the offense last year and made it better than the Michigan offense.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Jay Harbaugh, slam dunk right there.
That would have been a good pick. But, yeah, I mean, Michigan had lots of guys on the staff who were good candidates, but I don't want to underplay Gattis's role because there was a culture change in this program, and the whole youth movement was kind of like, let's like follow the Gattis blueprint. Like that, it seems like Gattis had a bigger role to play in how the program was shaped than
I don't know. I just can't look at what he was saying when he came in,
mm-hmm.
and what Michigan was this year, be like, oh yeah, that's all Josh Gattis, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it wasn't just like, all Josh Gattis. And like I said, he's the blueprint. So like other guys that were like Josh Gattis came in and did other things too, right?
Like they just ran the ball all the time, and like they didn't do a whole lot that was like, oh yeah, that they had a lot of nice game plans at the end of the year, but I just don't know. I don't know.
I think they decided that
is kind of a weird, random number generator kind of award anyway.
Like, well, they decided it right after the Big Ten championship game when Gattis had a great game. Like everyone's got Donovan Edwards throwing a touchdown pass right in their minds.
Anyway, so seems like kind of a missed opportunity. And like we talk about Harbaugh, Harbaugh works hard. Harbaugh's obviously a very good coach, but I think that there are just certain things about him that kind of keep him a level down from your Smarts and Sabins and Ohio State machine, whoever's in front of it. And the sort of flightiness is one of those. And I think we kind of saw that. And I'm a little bit bummed out that I feel like this compromises the ability of Michigan to win a little bit in the future. I mean, it's not going to turn him into a 3-9 program or whatever, but the chance that they make the leap to be like a consistent playoff contender kind of feels farther away than it did a month ago.
Yeah. You know, Harbaugh's dalliance with the NFL and the clear fact that he didn't go because he, you know, wasn't offered a job ultimately. It's going to be easy to recruit against Michigan. Hey, that guy wants to be in the NFL, not there. It kind of changes the whole feel from like, we're all in this together. We can come together and get, you know, the Michigan guy and like the smartest guys in the room and the youngest guys. And like, everyone's just, we're going to outwork everybody. And, you know, having a week where Harbaugh wants to go to the NFL and he's expecting all of assistants to be, you know, on the road recruiting a program they don't even know is going to be there. And not telling them what was going on. Like Harbaugh, I'm sure has the ability to compartmentalize because he is just that weird, right? He can go faster than anybody else in head coaching one team while looking for another job. But most people can't do that, and most people can't compartmentalize the boss going and looking for another job while he's got me working really hard in a direction I don't even know what to go. So I think he's going to have to massage the staff first. He's got to get them locked up. He's got to figure out who's offensive defensive coordinator is, and he's got to kind of recapture the feeling of last season. It can't just be a one-off. And to do that, it's probably going to start with some sort of sign monetarily. I mean, you lost the opportunity with Gattis to have like a head coach in waiting. So now you kind of have to have Harbaugh show people that he's here, he's serious, he's all on board. And, you know, okay, I checked the NFL out. I'm not going. Here's where we're going to be, and here's where we're going to be in 6 years. That's what we lost.
All right, we're going to take a break and look a little bit towards the future.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality, for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage it with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give Attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom-printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Something bad is about to happen to me. I don't know what, but I feel it coming. Might be so sad, might leave my nose running. I just hope she don't wanna leave me. Don't you give me up, please. Don't give up on me. I belong with you, only you, babe. Only you, my girl, only you, babe. Only you, darling, only you, babe. Only you, my girl.
So Michigan is now bereft at both coordinator spots, and everybody is wondering what's next. I don't have any idea. And if you look at where McDonald came from, if you look at where Don Brown came from, if you look where Josh Gattis came from, pretty much all of those hires were completely out of left field. Like, nobody was talking about any of those people until everybody was talking about them. And I kind of feel like trying to pick out who seems like the coordinator du jour to go get is kind of a fool's task. And even when Ohio State went and got Jim Knowles out of Oklahoma State, if you look at his track record, it's like, yeah, he had a good defense this year. And the rest of it's kind of like, well, he was at Duke, so what do you expect a guy at Duke to do?
I mean, there are a couple ways. There are a couple like first names to go to, right? Like, they're going to check out Larry Foote because Larry Foote is very close to getting a DC job in the NFL, and he's kind of like the Juwan Howard pick for that position. So if he wants to come, then, I mean, he seems like he could recruit. I know he hasn't done it yet, but, like, he's been heavily involved in some really good defenses, and, you know, that's,
well, I mean,
it's a Michigan dude. Like, that's a potential.
Yeah. There's, I mean, there's the McDonald thing there, too, where it's like a guy who has all of his coaching experience in the NFL showing up in college and being like, oh God, what have I done?
I think that that might be less of a problem with Larry Foote because, you know, he's been involved in some Michigan recruitments, even from the NFL. He's been around the program. He's one of the guys. He's not a vocal one of the guys. Like, I don't think he and Braylon Edwards really deserve to be kind of used in that same sense of, like, you know, the car guys who are outspoken. But he's also very centered in Detroit. I don't know how many people pay attention to, like, the things that NFL players do for charity, but his neighborhood in Detroit is in northern Detroit, actually closer to Ferndale than downtown. He's been almost single-handedly keeping that neighborhood alive. You know, he sponsors an event there every year. He comes every year for volunteer events. Like, everyone in Detroit knows his name. I think he had a party there after they won the Super Bowl there. Like, he didn't go party with his teammates. He went, like, to his old neighborhood and partied with his... he has got very deep roots in the state of Michigan. And it seems like he would not have as hard of a time as McDonald in that transition. Now, there's a downside to that, too, that, like, Foote is a lot more of a football guy, whereas McDonald was, like, an analyst dude who, like, got really into football and, you know, was basically was, like, a video game to him. And I understand why that kind of guy might not have as much success in living rooms. I don't think Foote's going to have any problem in living rooms.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is, you know, does he show up, have to be on the road recruiting all the time and be like, nope, nope, nope.
Yeah.
I mean, that does happen. We just had it happen, right? So that's the only concern of, like, a pure NFL guy. Like, if Foote had had, like, even a couple of years as a position coach at a college and he came back, it's like, okay, I know what I'm getting into, right?
Right, right.
I have lived this life before. I'm not going to be shocked by what's about to happen to me. So. Yeah.
So the other name out there that's, like, the most McDonald-like is Jesse Minter, who was McDonald before McDonald. Spent years as an analyst in the Ravens organization. It's Rick Minter's kid. If you're one, if like you have a mind for former Notre Dame defensive coordinators, it's Rick Minter's son. But he's the he's had 1 year as the defensive coordinator at Vanderbilt. I'm not sure you can, you know, say that 1 year at Vanderbilt's gonna really tell you anything, but at least he's had that year in college. And he was actually 7 years he spent in the lower ranks of college. Like, he was on that staff Georgia State that moved up to FBS, and you remember they almost upset Wisconsin that one time. Like, he was the defensive coordinator that almost beat Wisconsin. Now, they got fired at the end of that season because they went 2-8, but there was an injuries and Georgia State's kind of a badly run program. But, I mean, he has been in college. He's been in Indiana State before that. He, and obviously, since then, he's been with the Ravens, except for, like, 1 year at Vanderbilt. So, I mean, that guy, if you looked at his resume versus McDonald's resume last year, you'd be like, yeah, why don't we just take Jesse Minter?
Yeah, maybe. Offensive side of the ball, I mean, your guess is as good as mine, right?
Yeah, I mean, people just think that they're going to upgrade Matt Weiss, and then, I mean, what you can do is make Weiss the OC, or co-OC, obviously, because Sherrone Moore is keeping his co-OC job, unless they make Sherrone Moore the offensive coordinator. But I think they're going to elevate Weiss to co-OC, my best guess, and then move Bellamy over to receivers, and that gives you a lot more space to get a defensive guy, because you lost a defensive guy to get Weiss in the first place, and there's been that imbalance ever since. So I think that's my guess of where the direction they're going to go. That would also give whoever you hire at DC an opportunity to bring a guy with him, or to get a guy who's not, you know, that expand your search from linebackers guys to secondary guys as well.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean,
are you confident? I mean, we're you know what, when they make these hires, it's going to be fine. We're going to get excited. I mean, unless they just didn't promote two internal guys, like they promote Klingscale. Like, that's your floor. Klingscale probably knows what he's doing at this point. He ran the deep, you know, he's going to get coach DC anyway.
And I'm openly skeptical about like how much like this was actually Gattis' show on offense. So, like, how concerned am I when it's really just been the Jim Harbaugh show most of the time?
I mean, they did use a fullback this year, so I see the argument, but I also have done, you know, analysis on their offense and how it changed when Gattis got here, and it's more than you realize. Like, a lot of the things that they want to do and a lot of the ways they set things up are very Josh Gattis. The thing is, I think we got too focused on, quote, speed and space and what we thought that meant to really understand the concepts, what he was using. But, like, Michigan's offense has been predicated on the idea of pulling you this way sideways and then trying to go this way. And that is, I mean, it was Josh Gattis' offense. I'm pretty confident in saying that.
All right.
Fine. I've convinced you to be more upset about this. I'm sorry. Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I'm Seth Fisher, along with Brian Cook. All of these songs are actually about sex, including this one.